John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, we have more things to talk about than the 2 hours that we have together with all the things going on. Certainly a lot of things in the Jamal Adams trade and how that went. Jordan Brooks, the Seahawks' first-round pick, became the 28th first-rounder to get a deal, so he's now done, and they'll get their other picks done, I'm sure, here today or tomorrow. But, of course, the big story in sports right now is the Florida Marlins, and what a mess they are. And so what ends up happening, you know, and I don't know if this is because they had the stupidity of having an exhibition game with the, in Atlanta, which, of course, I mean, they should never do that. It's like go for the games that count, because what happened is by Saturday, they found out that three players tested positive for the virus. And so what they did, they went to their experienced shortstop, Miguel Rojas. How about this one, Curtis? And ask him, it's like, what do you think? Should we play or not play? And the league gave the team the ability to try to figure it out. And he says, oh, no, we should play. So now you've got 15 people in the organization, at least 8 players. You've got 4 teams canceling games, you know, because of the virus. And now you put the baseball season in jeopardy. What a stupid thing.
Yeah, last I checked, shortstops aren't medical professionals. It was so preventable, too. And the fact that the baseball season now kind of hangs in the balance because of all of this mess with the Miami Marlins, just so unfortunate. But we have got a lot of news to get to.
Yeah, so let's get to it with the 5 biggest stories of the day.
Number 1.
Play action. Jones back to throw. Under some pressure, he'll be hit. Jamal Adams takes the ball away. He's going to run right and score. Jamal Adams to the 5 is into the end zone for a touchdown. Jamal Adams on a blitz simply snatches the ball away from Daniel Jones and runs it back for a Jet defensive touchdown.
So Jamal Adams comes over in a trade. Seahawks gave up a lot, 2 first-round picks, one in 221 and 222, gave away a third-round pick next year, and then Bradley McDougal in the trade, but they get a 4th round back in 2022. But what they get is a great player. Guy right now that I think is considered to be the best safety in the game, and you can basically call him a playmaking ability of Cam Chancellor. He's got great range. He goes sidelines to sidelines. He's got sack ability. I mean, he's one of the things that teams are looking for now, particularly with the mobile quarterbacks and the way offenses are evolving, you know, particularly some of the offenses like the 49ers and Rams and teams like that that have these inside-out type running games. And so what you want is the versatility of somebody that can play a cornerback position, a safety position, a linebacker position, and that's Jamal Adams. He's got blitzing abilities. He's got 12 sacks in his career, 12 forced fumbles. You heard one of his 2 touchdowns that he scored during his career on defense. He's not necessarily the greatest guy for interceptions, but he makes plays. And so now you look at a secondary that certainly has got to be one of the most talented in football. Pro Bowler in Shaquille Griffin, possible Pro Bowler in Quentin Dunbar, 2-time Pro Bowl alternate at the free safety with Quandre Diggs. Then you got 2 great young guys in Marquise Blair and Ugo Amadi. So what you're looking at is, I mean, it's not the Legion of Boom. I'm kind of calling it the Legion of Zoom, kind of going into where teams are as far as meetings and stuff like that and interviews. But the Legion of Zoom, or whatever you want to call it right now, not going to be the equal of the Seahawks Legion of Boom, because, you know, in that group you have, you know, maybe as many as 3 possible Hall of Famers in Richard Sherman, and having you know, Earl Thomas, and also in the Cam Chancellor mode. But overall, this is a really good guy. And, you know, Adams, 24 years old, you know, he's willing to play for the you know, his contract this year, and then try to maybe work on something for next year. He's got an 825 base. He has $2.735 million coming up in 5 days into camp as far as a roster bonus that the team picked up. But overall, interesting move. And, you know, we saw that the Seahawks got, you know, 6 guys on the NFL top 100 list. Well, Adams is a guy that is now the 7th, and so now they equal the Seahawks in the NFL top 100 with Baltimore and New Orleans, and they get a player that they never expect to get being a playoff team, you know, a guy that could be at the beginning of a budding Hall of Fame career. Interesting trade. So we're going to go over it a lot of different ways. We're going to talk to Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets for ESPN.com. That'll be at 10:30. Jeremy Fowler will be joining us to talk about the trade and what's going on as far as worries about the pandemic and everything else, and so particularly with the Marlins situation. So that'll be it. So Jamal Adams coming to Seattle.
Number two.
Clowney standing up on the left side of the Seahawks defense. Roethlisberger steps up, gets hit again, and he goes down. Jackson is there to get him. Brandon Jackson from right here in Pittsburgh makes the big play along with his other buddy Quentin Jefferson, also from Pittsburgh. They let Big Ben know they are not going away. Three and out to start the game for the Pittsburgh offense.
Well, in Seahawks cleared some cap room. You know, a week ago, when it seemed like everything, and Antonio Brown retired, and he's saying he still wants to play and all that stuff, that, you know, once those talks kind of broke off, that you're thinking, okay, Mike Best would be John Snyder, will make a move. And sure enough, he did. He gets the Jamal Adams trade. And now you kind of wonder, is there another move in the works? Because the Seahawks did cut over the weekend Brandon Jackson, 2.133 salary on the escalator. Joey Hunt, 2.133 backup center, and Jordan Roos, they're among nine Seahawks to be let go. And so what you wonder about now is like, okay, now where's that go next? Does that mean they're going to make another pitch at Clowney now that they have more cap room? Because they saved money on the McDougal thing versus the Adams, and you know they were at about $17 million right now, you know, with the 4.266 that they save on the two players. And so tough to see those guys go. But again, it shows that some things happening. And of course, as we mentioned, Jordan Brooks ended up getting his contract done today.
Number three.
The vote has been approved. The player reps just a minute ago did approve the vote. Training camp is on. Football will be back as scheduled. That was the final hurdle that this side needed. The NFLPA had met earlier today. They approved the owner's proposal, and it had to go to the player's reps. It did that. The player vote goes through. They got through their financial hurdles that they had, opt-out clauses that they had, acclimation periods that they had. We are good to go. Football will begin on time.
Again, tomorrow, there may not be a lot of football, certainly in the first few weeks, but there will be football. And as it stands right now with that vote, it was a little surprising that they took the players allowed the, because again, even teams allowed the fact that now you have a floor. And I've been working on the numbers all week, all weekend, and pretty much realize, okay, when you start to even add the thing for next year, right now, this year's cap is going to be, you know, 175, 176, and it can grow because they can find financial things that they can add during the season. You know, maybe some Saturday games that they can move when there's no college football games. You know, maybe some other type of things. You know, they have the eight rows blocked off for sponsorships. You know, you got the gambling money that's coming in, so they can try to get that up a little bit more, but it's not going to equal the 198.2. And where Seattle's in decent shape is that half the league right now is over next year's cap. And that's, of course, the cap is 175 and plus in 2021. So now what ends up happening is that, you know, you can see that, you know, they want the money now, but they were able to take $17 million a team in benefits and move that into the future. They were also able to come back and, you know, make some other concessions. I mean, I think there's not going to be a Pro Bowl because they're not going to have Pro Bowl bonuses, and they're not going to have pay for the Pro Bowl, but a lot of different things that they worked out there. But they're spreading the loss now through 2024. Players will have 7 days from the time of the agreement signed to make a decision about whether to opt out for the season. And so that's going to be sometime in the first week of August. But nevertheless, they got the deal done, and football's all set to start tomorrow.
Number four.
The stretch and the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a line drive the other way to right field for a base hit. Nola will score. Long is running third, heading home. The throw to the plate, and he's safe. Head first slide. Shed Long gets in ahead of the throw by Josh Reddick. Kyle Lewis with a single in the right field, drives in a couple, and the Mariners have the lead 7-5 here in the top of the eighth inning. And Kyle Lewis comes through again and again.
So the Mariners get their first win against the Astros. Last year they were 1-18. Now they're 1-2. So Kyle Lewis had a great weekend. Helmers in the first two games, you know, was hitting real well. Bullpen, very shaky. I think we expected that, but they got the win. And that snapped a 15-game losing streak to the Astros, the first win in Houston since 2018. So the season will, the series will conclude tonight. You'll be able to hear the game with a pregame at 3 o'clock and the first pitch at 4:10 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Number 5.
Marlins news yesterday and their travel plans today is obviously a giant red flag as to what if this continues, not just with the Marlins and it gets worse, let's say, with them, but with other teams. What are we going to do then? Now, you have 60 players to deal with, not 30, so you could keep bringing guys in, but that's kind of not the point. At some point, you have to say, this team is incapable of playing baseball this year. I don't think it'll come to that, but yesterday was not a good day for Major League Baseball, given all the COVID-related issues.
And again, mismanagement. How can you let a shortstop, Miguel Rojas, make the decision, you know, because he's the most experienced guy on one of the worst franchises in sports, the Miami Marlins. And so now you've got pretty much two series that are up in the air because, you know, the Marlins had to cancel their game in Baltimore. Yankees had to cancel their game because Philadelphia played Miami on Sunday. And so you got now quarantines coming up. You know, 15 people in the Marlins organization ended up getting it. And so, you know, the players for the Phillies are being tested at their home ballpark today, and they're required to go straight home into quarantine until they get the results. You know, the Marlins are still at the team hotel in Philadelphia. What an absolute disaster. And so now what they have to do is figure out, you know, how to get all four teams back together and when they can play again. And of course, you can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Well, coming up next under further review, what better to review than Jamal Adams and that trade and where that puts the Seahawks in contention for the Super Bowl. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Even though I thought the Seahawks were pretty good at the safety position, I mean, so good that they struggled to get Marquise Blair even on the field because McDougal had been a Pro Bowl alternate 2 years ago, Quandre Diggs a Pro Bowl alternate the last 2 years. And so you kind of wondered, okay, do they really need Jamal Adams? But also, in making this trade, they get a player that they don't think they could ever get, you know, drafting in the 20s, and because it's hard to get guys in the 20s to be Pro Bowl players. And here's a two-time Pro Bowl player. He's 24 years old. You can lock him up after maybe this year to a long-term contract. I mean, sure, you gave up two first-round picks, and that's tough, but here's a guy that really means a lot. So I know that Brock Huard was on the with Danny and Gallant talking about what this means for the Seahawks' Super Bowl contention.
Brock, is he a good enough player to put the Seahawks over the top? Does he make them not just a, hey, they could make the playoffs, maybe win a playoff game. Does he make them, hey, this is one of the four or five teams that we think are Super Bowl favorites?
Well, I read that argument and said, I think it was Bill Barnwell that wrote that over the weekend as far as the Honey Badger. And when the Honey Badger went to Kansas City, that he was the piece defensively to put them over the top. But let me remind everybody that the Chiefs had one Frank Clark and one Chris Jones in a defensive line that was not the 32nd worst defensive line in all the NFL. So the Honey Badger came in and certainly helped with those that same word I'll use again and again is instincts, just the defensive instincts that those two former LSU guys have, where they played so much man-to-man football, where they are so physical and aggressive, where they let those guys cut a loose down in Baton Rouge. And there's, you know, a lot of similarity. Jamal is a much bigger, more physical, more dominant player, but the Honey Badger certainly aided that defense in Kansas City. You add now Jadeveon Clowney, Danny, and you've got some cap space to do that. You now add Jadeveon Clowney or another piece to that defensive line or two. Now we're having a conversation that this is the glue guy that brings together the back end with the front end of that defense that still needs help.
Yeah, I think in, where Brock is, you know, pointing things, and I think it's right, is that the way these deals worked is that, okay, they save a little bit of room with the McDougal trade because McDougal was making a higher cap number and less of a cap hit than it was for, getting Adams because, you know, he's got the $825,000 base salary and $2.735 on the roster bonus that'll get paid in 5 days after the start of camp. But what it does, you know, they, with the fact that, you know, they made the moves now on Brandon Jackson, you know, cutting him with the 2133 salary and also cutting Joey Hunt, it does kind of tip off the idea that they could take another run at Clowney. Now, Clowney's taken the position. He has a number in mind. I can't guess what it is, but I think it's less than $17 million. And so he's not coming off that number. He might at some point, but the team still has a position to maybe see if they can get something done with Clowney. Because, again, I think for Clowney, I mean, even though he's going to be playing at a major discount of what he wants, you know, the team does have some more money to go ahead and see if they can at least get something done, because this is the one team until they open up the positions that he can talk to and try to do something. So in the end, I mean, you know, I think that Adams certainly puts them closer to the 49ers, but I think that Adams and Clowney put them maybe over the 49ers, because you notice that on the NFL Network they started going through the top 100, and they started before the weekend with six in the top 100, which was tied with three other teams. It was the third best group in football. But now you add Adams, who arguably is the best safety in football. He comes in and he gets now with New Orleans and Baltimore at seven. And when you start talking seven top 100 players, because Chris Carson made it last night, DK Metcalf made it last night, now you're talking that this team really is talented. And Curtis, I think that you look at San Francisco, they've got five. We don't know which five are in the top 100, but also the beauty of this trade, even though it did cost them two first round picks and more, is that what you do get is the ability to have a longer window than, say, San Francisco. Because San Francisco, for example, with the $175 million cap number, they're right near the cap right now, maybe $3 million under for next year, a 175 cap, and they've got 29 free agents. They've got their three top cornerbacks up at the same time. They've got George Kittle, they got to try to get something done with. They've got Solomon Thomas on the offensive line. That's a lot. And where Seattle, they can do something with Carson. They can do something with Griffin. They can do something certainly with Dunbar after they see how he can fit in here. But overall, I mean, this move on Adams, gives Seattle a better chance to challenge for the Super Bowl this year and an even better chance next year.
Yeah, and there are people who may not like the trade because of what the Seahawks gave up. Two first-round picks is a pretty steep price in addition to Bradley McDougal. But what can't be argued is that the Seahawks are a better team today than they were on Friday, the day before they acquired Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams makes this team a much better version of what they were. I think that move could potentially add maybe a win to the Seahawks' final season total. I think it takes them maybe from a 10-win team to an 11-win team. And if you add Jadeveon Clowney, then I think you're looking at maybe a 12- or 13-win team, because that would, I think that would be the final piece to this puzzle, is bringing back Clowney or getting some added help to that defensive line, whether it's an Everson Griffin or something like that. Because as it currently stands, I really like the Seahawks secondary. I really like the linebacking core, but that defensive line, John, that is still the biggest question mark on this team. But with the added cap space of bringing Adams, you also cut the nine players, including Brandon Jackson, Joey Hunt, and Jordan Roos. Maybe there is a little bit of wiggle room to bring Clowney back or to bring somebody else in at that pass rushing spot.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that, sets it up because, it's curious because I know that Brandon Jackson technically is a five technique, would be the number three guy because you have draft choices ahead of him like LJ Collier, and then you also have Rasheen Green. And so, but I think it does signal that, it's interesting that they did it now. Now, obviously, you can double back and then bring him back at the minimum, but I think what it does, it's telling, and particularly to cutting your backup center. But they do have Ethan Posick and BJ Finney to be there too. Jordan Roos was a backup, but they've drafted a couple guards in the last couple years, Phil Haynes being one, and certainly Damian Lewis. So something had to give, but I'm just kind of curious that they did it now as opposed to in camp, where now you can say maybe they are going to take another run at something else.
And, boy, if they did that, I mean, watch out, because I think the Seahawks are breathing down the 49ers' neck. And if they did that, you know, quite possibly they could leapfrog San Francisco in the NFC West race for 2020. I mean, obviously you've got Russell Wilson in tow, so you know how many wins he's capable of adding to a season. And, you know, if they can shore up that defense, which was the biggest question mark, you know, last season, it's still the biggest question mark right now. I think the Seahawks could be in for a great 2020 if things continue to break right for them. And it also kind of lends credence to the patience that John Schneider and Pete Carroll have shown this offseason. Yeah. And we've heard all offseason from Dave Wyman how Seahawks fans should be patient with Seattle because they tend to make moves late in the offseason. We saw it with Clowney, Sheldon Richardson a few years ago, and then just on this past weekend with Jamal Adams. It's almost like Wyman knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, it really does. And so we'll see how it goes. Hey, tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle. Remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or app. Coming up next, we'll get you all the details of Jamal Adams. Talk to Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets for ESPN.com. He comes up next.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, obviously the big news over the weekends was Jamal Adams getting traded by the New York Jets to the Seattle Seahawks, and a big blockbuster trade that had two first-round picks, a third-round pick, Bradley McDougal with a fourth-round pick in 2022 coming back. To talk about Adams and talk about the trade, Rich Cimini from ESPN.com joins us. And so, you know, tell us, Seattle fans, what the Seahawks get in Jamal Adams.
Well, they're getting a really good player who's only 24 years old, a two-time Pro Bowler, an All-Pro last year. I think hasn't even reached his ceiling yet. For the Seahawks, he'll be a smaller yet more athletic version of Cam Chancellor. He's just going to be that intimidator on the field. He's like the Energizer Bunny. He's all over. He's nonstop. He's a box safety. He's not going to make a lot of plays in coverage. You know, look at his interception total. I think he's got two career interceptions. So he's not a ball hawk. I don't think he has the instincts in pass coverage, but he's going to be, I'm sure Pete will use him as a blitzer. He's a very good blitzer. He's a sideline-to-sideline tackler. He's a tone setter. And so they're getting a very good player on a team-friendly contract for 2 years.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, the amazing part is, and I see, I mean, you made sure I knew that his bonus had already paid, the $2.7 million roster bonus that was paid in March. Still, a lot of people haven't picked up on that because, you know, they get him basically, and apparently he's agreed to at least play out this season with that at $825,000, and then the fifth-year option's $9.8 million, when I'm sure they can start seeing about whether they can work out a deal. But, you know, $825,000 for Adams this year is pretty cheap.
Yeah, I think I made a mess that one up, John. I do think that he has not been played. I double backed on that.
Oh, okay.
I don't think the Jets have paid him that bonus yet, but be that as it may, he's making $3.6 million this year. So even if the Seahawks pay the $3.6 million, that, you know, that's an outstanding, I mean, that's a bargain for a player of that caliber. And then, like you said, it's $9.9 million next year on the 50-year option. If they even get to that point, they might tear it up, you know, and do a new deal by then. Obviously, Seattle is really under the gun now. They have to extend this guy because they just gave away two first-round picks, so they want to extend him. And, you know, Jamal, you know, the thing that's a kick in the rear for Jet fans is that he didn't want to play for this contract with the Jets, but yet he's willing to play for it with Seattle. So what does it say about the Jets? I think it raises a lot of serious questions about where the Jets are as an organization.
When did Jamal start having his problems with Adam Gase and the organization?
Well, you know, I think it was really at the trade deadline last year. You know, when his name got floated out in the media, the Jets were talking to the Cowboys, and Jamal just, you know, frankly, I just think he behaved like a child. I mean, he tweeted criticisms of the organization. He went on a rant with the media, you know, saying this is not how teams deal with star players. The Patriots don't take calls on Tom Brady. The Rams don't take calls on Aaron Donald. And, you know, I think even though they eventually buried the hatchet, they said they did, I think that created a fracture in the relationship. And I don't think Jamal ever got over that. And I just think it created a mistrust, and I think it carried into the off season. And when he found out that the Jets weren't going to break the bank for him with an extension, I think he just said, I'm done with this place. I got to get out of here.
Of course, I mean, that's the thing that I don't think Jamal and a lot of players realize. It's like, how can you do long-term deals when you don't know what the cap's going to be for next year? And, of course, it wasn't until Friday that teams found out now that it could be as low as $175 million. I mean, that's why, you know, Kansas City was able to get two deals done. But in the first year, Chris Jones didn't get a raise. And in the first 2 years of the Mahomes deal, it's the same amount of money, 2 years, 27.2. So it's pretty hard to figure out next year's cap and what you're going to do with a player, at least until you know it. And that was Friday.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. You know, I think that was definitely part of it. But look, if you really want a player, you can find a way to keep him. And I just think the Jets, Joe Douglas, set in his mind that he was not going to pay a non-quarterback a new extension after 3 years, with 2 years left on his rookie deal. I just don't think he did not want to set that precedent for a non-quarterback, you know, or any player for that matter, because then, you know, maybe he'll have Sam Darnold knocking on the door next year saying, hey, where's mine, if Sam has a good year. So Joe just, he did not want to do that. He did not want to bend on his, you know, his own philosophy to accommodate this player. And, you know, he just told, you know, he said publicly, we want to make Jamal a Jet for life. What he wasn't saying publicly, but I don't want to do it till next year. And Jamal, that just didn't sit well with him. And then I do think he stretched his acrimony with Adam Gase. I mean, that was something that I think he threw in at the end. We never heard about that last year. I think they got along fine. It was just, he was just looking for reasons to get out of town.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, okay, Adam is an offensive coach that developed under Mike Martz, and you know, some of the communication is going to be more with the offense with the defense than with the defense, particularly when Greg Williams is there with the defense.
Yeah, Jamal had very few interactions with Adam Gase. I mean, he dealt basically with Greg, and he really likes Greg, and Greg likes him. They, you know, Greg was, the other day, about a couple of weeks ago, was talking about how he thinks Jamal is one of the best players he's ever coached, a future Hall of Famer, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, Gase, look, is Adam a great leader? I don't think he's a great leader, and I don't think he's the kind of coach players want to play for. He's not a Pete Carroll in that sense. So I think Jamal is going to get along great with Pete. I just think they're going to have a fabulous player-coach relationship, and Adam is not that kind of player. Jamal is not the first star player under Adam who got shipped out. I mean, you saw it in Miami with Jarvis Landry. He's just not that kind of coach. That, you know, he's not a charismatic guy where people want to be around him, and that's something the Jets are going to have to deal with going forward if he's their coach over the long term.
And the tough part for Adam and the Jets is that if this team doesn't do well, and right now you wonder, you know, getting rid of one of your best players is going to put him in a position to not do well. Where does that stand for Adam Gase, you know, who had those same problems down in Miami, and now if he doesn't win this year, what happens to him?
He's probably out. You know, I mean, he went 7-9 last year. I actually thought he did a really underrated job just to get that team to 7 wins. I mean, this team was 1-7 falling apart, and they got to 7-9, so with an unbelievable amount of injuries. So I thought he did a good job. Probably didn't get credit for that job he did last year, but, you know, the Jets haven't made the playoffs in 9 straight years. If they go 7-9 again with no Tom Brady in the division, and if Darnold regresses or flatlines, then that's an indictment of Adam Gase. And then I think that Joe Douglas and Christopher Johnson, or whoever's the owner of the Jets at that point, will just say, look, we need to make a change. So I think this is a huge year for Adam Gase.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's also so strange, not just of Gase, but the organization. As you've noted over the weekend, you know, here's a team that hasn't been to the playoffs for 9 straight years, which gives them good draft positions, and they've traded 5 of their last 6 first-round picks. How does that happen?
Yeah, 5 of the last 6 in the 2013 to 2017 range, five of the six first-rounders have been traded. And the one they didn't trade, they cut, which was D. Milner, who was just an awful player. So that's why the Jets are the Jets right now. I mean, they just cannot. And this is not one man's fault. This is going back over three GMs. They cannot identify talent, and they cannot develop talent. And so Joe Douglas, you know, you can't blame him. He just got on the job here. He's already traded two number ones, Leonard Williams and now Jamal. And so Jet fans, I understand their skepticism. They've heard this so many times before. Oh, you know, we hate to lose so-and-so, but we got all these great draft picks. You know, they've heard it so many times, and the draft picks end up turning to busts. So we'll see if Joe Douglas can reverse the trend from what his predecessors have done.
Yeah, and that's and now so what happens with Sam Darnold? Because you know, clearly and he's not reached that level where he was drafted yet.
And he's not a Joe Douglas draft pick, although Joe has said everything publicly. He's been very supportive of Sam. And, you know, Sam is not quite in the Mitch Trubisky category yet. I mean, he hasn't regressed. He just hasn't improved as much as you would have liked over the first 2 years. The organization remains very committed to him. There's been no talk about, you know, replacing him. But, you know, it's a really big year for him. I mean, it's year three. You want to see that jump. It's his second year in Gase's offense. So he should be more comfortable. And I think he's got a lot of talent. He just hasn't had a really good supporting cast around him. So that's, you know, again, getting back to more of the infrastructure and the organization's dysfunction.
Amazing. So you think that, I know as a pricey, they probably gave maybe a little too much, but do you think that Seattle made a good move in getting Jamal Adams?
Well, they're in a completely different situation from where the Jets are right now. It is a lot to give up a safety. I mean, in fact, it's only the eighth time since 2000 that a team traded two number ones for a player. And so it is a boatload for a safety, you know, a strong safety, a really good player, by the way, but still a strong safety. And but, you know, they're in a winning mode right now. You know, they have a franchise quarterback in Russell Wilson who's got a few really good years left. So the window is still very much open, and their secondary declined last year. I mean, they're statistically not the same as it used to be. And the Seahawks just have so much confidence in their ability to find players out of the first round that maybe they don't have as much desperation for first-round picks as some other teams do. So I do see why Seattle made the trade. I do see why the Jets made the trade. It's apples and oranges where the two organizations stand. But, you know, hopefully it's one of those trades that work out for both teams.
Read Rich Simidi at ESPN.com. Rich, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, John, anytime.
Be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. We'll come back and go behind the lines and get you updated on the National Football League. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, the rush is on right now to get everything set for opening of training camp, which, of course, is kind of a slow opening of training camp. You know, all the other teams, Kansas City and Houston's already been in, and now it's a matter of 30 other teams to report to tomorrow and see if they can get things started. And, of course, the only thing they can do is players come in tomorrow. They take their COVID-19 test, sit for 2 days, and go on Zoom video and kind of watch what's going on as team meetings and such like that. Then on 2 days later, they come back and they take another test and then wait for the results and then start to see if they can get into the building starting early next week. So not much is going to happen, but there is a lot of things going on. Draft choices are signing like crazy. Jordan Brooks got his deal done. Five more Seahawks need to get done to get their draft class complete. New Orleans signed their 4 draft choices today. San Francisco signed their 5th of 5, getting that done. And right now, as we speak, there's about 228 of the 255 draft choices that have deals. So there's only 27 left. So that's going in the right. And of course, I would imagine by tomorrow, we'll be down to just a handful because, you know, everybody's coming in, getting their deals done. It was about 26 teams, I think, right now that have their deals done. So there's only 4 remaining. Rams, of course, they don't have a single draft choice done, but they're always the last to get their deals done, and they're supposed to report tomorrow. Now, the one thing that I don't know how this is going to be is a holdup, or it could be a holdup. You know, 20 of the teams have had their plans approved for the protocol and everything else for training camp. Seahawks are among 12 teams that haven't had it, and that's only because there's so few people with the Players Association reviewing those 1,000-page documents, so they're taking the time. But, you know, of course, you know, these are approvals to get the protocol for training camp. But again, what do you talk about training camp? It really doesn't start to next week. So no hold up there. And, you know, we can see that that'll stay busy. So in the end, we'll have the decision at some point when the physicals can be going for teams that are looking for players coming from the outside, you know, because, again, if you are signing or coming in, you know, you can't have a workout or anything else without, you know, being quarantined. So that still has to be resolved, and they'll have to figure that out. But overall, I guess the good thing now, Curtis Rogers, is, you know, training camps are set to start, although naturally all NFL teams and the NFL has to be looking at baseball and that Marlin mess where 15 players have tested, or 15 people in the organization, including about 8 players, have tested positive, and now 4 teams have had to cancel their games because they've been around the Marlins.
Yeah, I think the NFL is looking at that situation, how Major League Baseball plans on handling this with wide eyes. I don't think they are just brushing this off as just something that is only a baseball problem, because the NFL and Major League Baseball have made it known that the only way that they feel as though they can play their seasons is by having teams play games in their home cities and not having a bubble, unlike how the NHL and the NBA has done. And if you look at the recent numbers from the NBA and the NHL, they're looking great. The NHL today announced they had no positive tests. They're in their hub cities of Toronto and Edmonton up in Canada. Canada's done an infinitely better job than the United States has at containing this. And then also down in Orlando, the NBA they haven't had any positive tests since entering into quarantine down there. So it just, you wonder what the feasibility is going to be like for these leagues that have chosen to not play their season in a bubble, if it's going to be possible to have that much travel. And maybe the NFL will have to do the schedule similar to how Major League Baseball did, where you're not having teams travel all the way across the country. You're having them stick to maybe sort of the geographic areas. And obviously, you play more games against your division than any other team in the NFL. But you wonder, John, if the NFL is going to have to make some sort of contingency plans if something like this were to happen in their league.
Yeah, but the difference is that what are you making? It's like, you know, eight games on the road, 8 games at home. You're only having 8 trips, where, of course, in baseball, it's a 60-game season. And so, you know, what is there? There's going to be, you know, 14 road trips or something like that. I have to think about the number here, but maybe, what, 10 to 11 or 12 road trips. So there's a little bit more. And naturally, I mean, you can get the charter and stuff like that. Unfortunately, I guess for the Marlins, their charter's stuck in, I don't know why it's stuck in Philadelphia. I guess it was stuck in Philadelphia, but it's like they can't get it going. And so, you know, they're still stuck being quarantined in Philadelphia. And you wonder how long is that going to take? So you have to think the games were canceled tonight with the Yankees and Baltimore and Philly, and, you know, they were all canceled. And, you know, you'd have to wonder, it's like, when are those teams going to resurface and be able to play?
Yeah, apparently there was an owner's call this morning amongst baseball owners just about how they handle this situation with the Marlins. Scott Miller of Bleacher Report, who is their columnist, he also does stuff for SiriusXM MLB Network Radio, he tweeted out just moments ago saying, "I'm told that on the owner's call today, there was no talk of canceling the season. Marlins news is sobering for the game, but plans remain to try and manage the pandemic. Commissioner's office will redouble health directives, e.g. players must wear masks in clubhouse and reinforce on-field behavior prohibitions against high-fiving and spitting. So it looks as though baseball's going to trudge along, which I don't know if that's the right response to a massive outbreak like this, because it's a very decent percentage of Marlins players that have, you know, the virus right now. And as we know, the recovery time is so varied from person to person. Yeah, these guys are in great shape because they're professional athletes, but if they're forced to go without their major league roster or a good portion of their major league roster for, you know, a couple of weeks, you can kiss any sort of playoff hopes they have mm-hmm. goodbye.
Yeah. By the way, you know, remember Raheem Mostert, was threatening to do something if he didn't get a pay adjustment.
Oh, yeah.
Well, apparently now they have worked out something. We don't know the details, but you know, they've worked out something to adjust his salary, so he's going to be in camp, and the relationship improved last week. You know, in another story, we got the Rams now starting to get their draft choices signed. You know, they signed 2 second rounder Cam Akers and Van Jefferson, a wide receiver, third rounder Terrell Lewis, and a safety taken in the third round, Terrell Burgess. So these deals are coming in as fast as you can have it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they balance out that running back attack in San Francisco with Mostert wanting more, even though he was brought in as sort of like a third string guy. But obviously his playoff performance is going to dictate an increase in playing time for him, because he was incredible in the postseason for him.
No question about it. Hey, coming up next, we're going to check out the Jamal Adams trade, you know, the protocols that were set up, the cap things. We'll talk to Jeremy Fowler from ESPN. That's coming up next.